Today I'm in Box Vicarage with Tom Scott, not the YouTuber Tom. Oh, I'm squeaking. I'm going to start again and not squeak.
Not leave the mic.
I don't normally do them in here.
It'll be okay.
It'll be fine. Is that, yeah. Today I'm in Box Vicarage with Tom Scott, not the YouTuber Tom Scott, but Tom Scott, who's going to tell us about himself in a moment. So, Tom, when and where did we first meet?
So I was trying to work out the exact date, but I can't put the exact date. It was a Saturday, and I think it was probably March or April in 2014, and I was tested. Or auditioned, Blue Peter style, I think you referred to it as before. I'd had lunch with Charlotte's mum for the first time, so I'd met Charlotte's mum for the first time when we started dating, and then I had to arrive here and pass the Elspeth test, which included just after eating lunch, bouncing on a trampoline. I don't think I passed. I hope I passed.
Did she ask you questions while you were bouncing on the trampoline?
Probably, but I'm not sure that there was much in the way of questioning. I think it was more of an endurance test to see if I couldn't, you know, puke after eating lunch.
So, yes, Elspeth now says hard training, easy war about certain things. Yeah.
Wise.
She started you straight in there, didn't she?
She did a bit.
Do you drink tea?
Do you drink tea? Yes.
What's your favourite sort of tea?
I'm not picky, but probably just a regular kind of own brand, hopefully fair trade style tea. Just the usual stuff, and probably quite a lot of it.
Now, you're one of the people who, at this point, has actually been listening to the podcasts.
I have.
So you know what I'm going to ask you next.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
So I have thought about this because I knew I was going to be asked that question. So I think there's a couple of things about that question which is interesting. So I thought about where I work and what I do and how that reflects in my experience of Christianity in the UK. So, and I can talk about it in two ways actually. One is about what we actually do, what I do for a living, which is to help produce statistics and at some point hopefully produce the next census in 2021. But I looked back at 2011 census and almost 60% of the UK, of the responses we got, said that they were Christian in some way. And that would encapsulate all types of Christianity. So from a kind of empirical sense, then there's a lot of Christians. But when my experience of what the most obvious aspect of Christianity is, which maybe is being part of a church or a community of people, I'm not sure that 60% of the UK population is in that. So from a kind of empirical sense, then maybe that statement is probably true. From a kind of the church is sleeping and it's not dying. There's plenty of people who are Christians or say that they are. But my sort of day-to-day experience of Christianity, I think, maybe tells me something slightly different, which is people don't necessarily understand the message of what the gospel looks like, and therefore, while they might say that they have Christian thoughts or Christian beliefs, they're not necessarily represented very well in their day-to-day lives. So I think there's some differences there about what people understand the message of the Bible is and what they're doing in their day-to-day life. And so I think that's where I find, from a kind of my own experience with people I work with and people who I'm friends with, I think maybe there's an element of that, sleepiness isn't quite a strong enough word, maybe a bit of indifference, probably. So yeah, I think there's two ways of viewing it, but I think it's, for me, my personal experience is, I think the church is a good and brilliant place for supporting and helping and leading people, and guiding people through their lives. But I'm not sure that everyone understands that and necessarily values it so much.
I guess part of the response to the sermon at the wedding, and a lot of the Christian church response has been, he's not saying anything we don't say in church every Sunday, or should be saying in church every Sunday, so why are people so surprised? But then there are lots of questions about people's actual experiences of church.
Yeah,
there.
That's right. So
you've got some really, really superly hard specialist questions. So, and I've got the world's squeakiest chair today. So, what do you think have been the biggest cultural changes in the UK, which will be a challenge to the census in 2021?
There's a lot of things. I mean, there's a very big thing, which is Brexit and how that affects the society we live in, because I think it was very divisive. The decision to even take a poll clearly wasn't necessarily the right timing for all sorts of reasons, and clearly some outside interference and some behavioural stuff which was odd about the polls and what was presented and what people's expectations were. So, you know, it didn't feel like an opportunity to bring people together. It sort of felt like an opportunity to highlight differences of opinion rather than trying to see what the UK should be. So from that point of view, that's really affected everything in government in some way or another. So as a kind of ability to deliver the census from a kind of why are we doing this point of view, actually there's lots of value in representing the country much more broadly within the census because of that, because those changes that will happen because of Brexit. But those changes make it more difficult to do the thing to actually represent people properly. So what I really care about is finding those unusual communities, those small groups of people who have commonalities, and being able to represent them properly and show people in the rest of the country where they exist and who they are, and in a kind of broad sense be more representative of everyone that lives here. But I think that those people are becoming more disenfranchised with government, and so their desire or their kind of my expectation for them to respond is probably reduced, and it actually will become more challenging for us to go and find them and make sure that they are represented within our data when it comes out at the end. So I think a lot of that kind of political change in the landscape has affected the way people respect government and what they see the government is there to do. And there is a difference between government and civil service, but we're enacting what the policy of government are. You know, as a civil servant, that's what I'm here to do. But we're also there to challenge back to government and to present that back. And I think an understanding of that isn't necessarily there. So people aren't inherently distrustful of what we're doing or what everyone does in government because they think they're being monitored, and actually we just want to actually truly show people what government is there to do and should be accountable for. So that I think is one of the big challenges. I think the other one is that people have less time, lots less time. And I think in the past people would have been delivered a nice big pack of questionnaires and would go around and fill it in and all that type of stuff. And I think whilst one of the big things that we want to do is to make sure that people have the opportunity to complete this online very easily, it still takes time to do that, and we still need to know more information than perhaps people think is right or appropriate. But we're not asking that because we don't think it's useful, we're asking that because it helps us to represent all sorts of factors. And one of the biggest things is, for example, if you kind of living in a pretty standard household, might be a bit chaotic normally, you know, taking an hour out of your week potentially to respond to yourself, maybe your partner, maybe some kids, or maybe one of your parents, for example, might be living with you. That could take you quite a long time to make sure you get all the details together and ready for that response. And it may not be anywhere near the priority that we have for this within your day-to-day life. So giving people the space to be able to do that and measuring it and maintaining it themselves is something that's really important to me. So, you know, making sure that people can do this quickly and we're very clear about what we're asking and how we're asking it is really important. And that includes things like changing the language that we use. So I used to work for the government digital service, and one of the big things that's really important is to open up the government to people. It's not about, you know, using simple language, it's about opening it up and being much clearer about what we want. And that's one of the challenges that we're trying to use to challenge that time aspect for people's lives, to make sure they really understand why we're doing it.
So how did the 2011 census work? Did people come round to do the census, or did people get paper copies? I can't remember.
And that's one of the biggest things. So actually, that's another thing that people don't remember from census to census. It's 10 years between the two. Mm. You ask some people, and some people will say, oh, I'm not even sure I responded. Well, 94% of people, households, did respond. So we did get a big response previously. So most people would have done. But what we did last time was to send out a paper questionnaire. It did have an access code. You could go online last time, but it wasn't very well promoted, and it was a bit new. No one else really around the world had really done that very much either. And we've seen subsequently other countries like Australia and New Zealand are pushing their respondents to try and go online, the USA as well. And so we're challenging ourselves to do that, because we think most people will have access to some sort of technology, and if they don't, we'll give them the opportunity to go and get the help, or we'll also send people around to encourage them to complete and help find ways of helping people to complete. So it could be we find your local community centre that's doing some completion event where you might be able to go and get some help doing it, or we'll send you to someone like, and I'm using this as an example, someone like Citizens Advice who might be able to help you complete, for example, or we might be able to sort of answer a few questions for you on the door and help you to do that. But the difference is we won't be sending everyone paper questionnaires at the very beginning. We'll send some people because we know that some people will need them and won't be having access to the internet, but we're going to try and encourage as many people to complete online.
I'm really curious about how you decide on who gets one or not. I mean, I know it's quite a way away and you may not know the answer to that yet.
So we use demography, so we work out who lives where on average and what their needs are, and it's very much needs based. So we'll try and understand groups and communities who live in particular areas, and it will probably be a measure of the difficulty for us to be able to help someone complete an online response as opposed to give them a piece of paper that they can manage themselves. And it will also be about identifying particular communities who might need paper as a way of measuring this. So one example would be potentially people who live in care homes and those types of communities. You wouldn't necessarily expect that those people who are in care homes to have all the capability of doing that, and also to be able to complete all the paperwork. So we'll give them access to online. Absolutely, we should do that. And lots of care homes have very thriving digital communities that live within them. We've done that. We know that because we've been out and done the research with them. But we also know that some care homes won't, so we'll give those people that paper up front to make the choice, and they can either complete it on the paper or they can complete it online. And I know what we prefer, because it's quicker and easier, we think it is, but also there's a reason you might want to use paper, because you may not be able to answer everything very quickly, and you may feel like when you're doing something online you tend to feel a bit more pressure about the time and about the speed at which you do it, and we know that that's a factor for lots of people, and about how much stress it causes them when they're doing something online.
Do you know yet how literacy might affect the 2021 census?
Yes, so it does affect it. It affects in two significant ways. One, understanding, so your legal requirement, so you're legally required to complete. So someone in the household, the householder, whoever that person is, it could be the adult in the household, or it could be someone else in the household who is considered the householder, will need to complete it. But even that concept of trying to explain what that means is really difficult. So literacy plays a big part of that. And we'll use advertising to tell people about that, use different methods for communication as well. And we'll also try and, one of the biggest things that I've learned through transforming government services is to open up the language. And it's not about dumbing it down, we're not trying to make it stupid, so people, ask you very stupid questions. We're trying to make it very clear what we're asking. So literacy does make a big impact. But by using digital tools and techniques, we can expect things to improve. So, people might be able to use their devices to speak to them and tell them what the question is. They might be able to get some help from someone else remotely whilst they're using their computer or iPad or iPhone or whatever they're using. So there's lots of opportunities if we're to use the technology of today to help people to complete.
So I guess it's 3 years' time.
Yep.
Is it going to be October?
No, it'll be March.
So March in 2021.
Yeah.
I guess in 2.5 years, will the technology all have changed again already?
So probably not, but we're trying to make sure that we use technology that's adaptable and flexible and as straightforward as possible so we can optimise it for different groups and different people and communities. It is really about opening up the opportunities to complete and not about specifically channeling people down one route or another.
I've got lots of ideas. I'm going to have to talk to you about once we've finished recording about this. I'm going to move on to the next difficult question. If you could change one thing about the civil service and or government, what would it be?
I think probably I've covered a bit of it before, but one of the most important things when I joined the civil service, one of the first things that my first manager, Katie, explained to me, she gave me a copy of, was the Civil Service Code. And that has four key things in it, which is integrity, honesty, objectivity, and impartiality. And those are the four key principles that civil servants should live up to. They're the right things for us to be doing. So every decision we make, we should be thinking about those key things and about what we're doing and how we're doing it. And the only way to really make decisions is to go and do things and test things and try things out and see what they look like. But there's a pressure from government, which is different to the civil service. They're the people we elect to lead us and tell us what direction we should be travelling in and what we should be doing. And the civil service is about enacting that policy, trying to bring that thing that government wants to happen into the real world to actually happen. But sometimes we have research and we have things that happen and we want to tell that back to government another way. So one of the most interesting things we've been doing research on the census about communities who are disparate, so maybe or maybe communities that aren't part of a sort of structure which we acknowledge as a kind of day-to-day life. So maybe gypsy or traveller communities or people who live on narrow boats, for example, and canals and things like that. So they have communities themselves, and how do we represent those back properly to government, and what needs do those people have? And that's really, I think, where that question, those points of integrity and objectivity come in. So without that, you struggle to try and make the decisions about what you might want to do. So I think for me, the thing I would really like to see is those four key principles being part of government and the civil service. And that's where that's where dialogue happens between the two. And that would be, for me, I think, a revolutionary change about how we share the experience of what we're doing in terms of things like universal credit or all sorts of other things, but back to government to actually see what it looks like properly. And we're doing it from a very honest and open, transparent way back to government. And it would be good if government also then can do the same back to us. And there are challenges, and you know, the whole point of government is to challenge civil service in some ways, to push them to deliver things which are new and unique. And there's absolutely, my experience has been as well, that civil servants can be quite intransigent and don't want to change. But I think when there is good vision and it's clear and those four key principles are followed, people do want to change.
Mm-hmm. What sort of church would you like the next generation to inherit?
One that follows those principles. No, maybe, I don't know. There's something about those principles which I think are really important. I've experienced something recently, one of my friends has experienced something recently, who's been getting a lot of support from a church, and her circumstances changed suddenly, and her and her family are getting an incredible amount of support, and that way that the church reacted to her need was, I think, really, really impressive, and was all about putting her at the centre of trying to support and doing that and helping her within the circumstances she was in. And I think for me that would be what I would like the future generations to inherit, a church that is focused on the people who have the most need within our communities, and not always about the people who attend our services. And it may well be that sort of ties back to that main question about is Christianity sleeping, or you know, I think there's something about that church relationship with individuals and the needs that people have, and the uniqueness of the church to be able to try and do something for people in that those circumstances, something that's not in government at all, and helping someone with a need which is not the same as money or shelter, but and it can do that and it should do that as well, but also something about trying to help that person be a full person, really being taken care of as a person and not just another number on a spreadsheet.
What's your favourite thing beginning with T?
I think was it Natalie who said technology?
Yes.
So I think I'll probably have to share with Natalie this one. Yeah, I like technology. That's why I like what I do. And the reason I like it is because it enables people to do so much more and see so much more and experience so much more. Particularly digital technology, so I might have a small d and a t, because I think it allows people to see something else outside of their physical circumstances around them. You can use YouTube to look at what's happening around the world. You can connect with people in ways that are just unimaginable, and I think it's something that is inclusive as well, so anybody can do this. It's accessible to people, things, very small adjustment for people with different mobility or other sorts of needs, and I think that's why in some ways it's brilliant, and also in other ways it's terrifying, because it allows people to connect in ways that we just don't understand yet, and that sort of interconnection with people I think is really important, but also is really interesting to see those communities flourish and change and move around the internet and other places because of technology. So yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you ever so much, Tom.
Thank you.